Ahoy, Vachon. How does the French say Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
It helps if you turn your mic on, Truman. That was the voice of Brian Brown, who created the Brown Briefly. And together, we, the Brieflys, try and keep Brian's creative flame alive by bringing you every week another episode of what we hope is intelligent discussion of current events, laced with a bit of humor and empathy, and always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. I've always loved that saying. So, hey, let me introduce the Brieflys. Right next to me here in the beautiful Gene Bosch broadcast studio in downtown Vachon is my partner in crime, Craig Bellis. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, Truman. It's good to be here.
Yeah, I didn't give you your normal routine this morning.
Well, we've tried to cut down on that a little bit. I was going to ask you to call me Reverend. Because I am a Reverend.
You are?
That's right.
Well, that's debatable.
But some people refer to me as the wrong Reverend, yeah, as opposed to the right Reverend.
Yeah, I could get that. I could get that for sure. You know, we're missing a couple of people today. We're going to have to kind of wing it. For one thing.
So what else is new?
Well, yeah, exactly. Amy is on the road somewhere, and I'm not sure where, actually. And Bruce has got a doctor's appointment this morning, and I love... He said, I have to go in for some tests. And I love that you said, gee, I hope you pass.
Right.
And he said, me too. So I don't know what the test is.
I don't either.
But yeah, it's tough. But, of course, we do have Kevin. Good morning, Mr. Kevin Jones. He's our, what we've been using for him lately? Oh, yeah, Indivisible Vachon in the Vachon Climate Action Group. Head thereof. So good morning.
That's me and Truman. I appreciate the Brieflys are caveating that intelligent discussion even more frequently these days as we go forward.
Boy, yeah, no kidding. We have to
be careful.
We have to say we're trying.
We do that even more than our opinions are not those of the board or the underwriters.
Exactly. Well, we have to do that. That's for sure. And by the way, I am Truman O'Brien. I'm sitting here behind the big red switch in downtown Vachon at the Gene Bosch broadcast studio. Easy for me to say.
Truman, what does that switch do, actually?
It's what lights up the whole world. I mean, without that, you know, Vachon would be dark.
We got the big red switch. We got the Guardian of the Galaxy. It's all here.
It's all here on the Brown Briefly, man.
I have to interject for a second. I watched a video yesterday that was made in about 1952 or something. And it was about the making of records, the Columbia Records.
Really?
Yeah. And they and Mel Blanc.
Mel Blanc
was the one who took somebody around. It was all rather comedic, but it was the real studio.
Oh yeah.
And they start out in the studio with the people singing, and they're at a board, like a control board ours, but a little more primitive, big round dials.
And
at the very end, in the very far end, there's a I think in that one it's an orange, you know, big button or something, and Blanc asks the technicians, they go, well, what's that? And he looks up and he goes, I don't know. We've never used that before.
I love that.
Well, we're back. Our music is back.
Oh, where's that coming from? Oh, I see. Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Well, thanks, everybody.
Yeah, buddy. It's been a great show. Well, I should clarify, by the way, to get things started. We do not have a guest today. So this is lovingly called the Truman Show.
Because, well, lovingly?
Well, I had to come up with some adjective. Some adjective to describe that. But anyway, so there's no guest today, and we're kind of just winging it with three of us, so we're going to have to really make up a lot of stuff to cover. But let's start by Kevin telling us how your week's been. What's going on with you?
Oh, it's been a good week. This morning had a chance to get up fairly bright and early, get out on the water today. And the rain held off long enough I could, you know, two-wheel it down to the boathouse and get out on the water and row around on the crescent, they call it. It was a spectacular day with a little bit of wind that we're shielded from. And then the rain came in right about the time I got back on the bike to come home. So it's a little bit of a soggy.
Oh, boy. But, soggy slog crisp. Home, huh?
It wasn't like a downpour.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those mornings where the air is crisp and cool, and it felt just really good to be out today.
Oh, great, great. You know, I've been out in my boat and seen you guys out sometimes when, boy, there were some pretty big waves. And it looked to me like that would be a little bit exciting to be out in a shell. It is.
I've not been rowing long. I've been boating way more than I've been rowing. But we encountered one of those wakes a month or so ago. And it just comes right up into the boat. You got maybe 4 inches of freeboard, and the wake doesn't care.
But oh.
we were bailing for 10 minutes or so to get the boat cleaned out.
Oh man! Well, aren't you kind of sitting low in the boat? Don't you get your behind wet when that happens?
It's a water sport.
Okay, I got that.
As my friends in the Czech Republic used to say, we're not made of sugar.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh. So speaking of not being made of sugar there, Mr. Craig. So what's your week been like?
Well, it was highlighted by two events. One was the final cabinet in on the remodel.
You got it in.
Yeah, and we used the convincer to do it.
You got
the really big hammer. We'll just use those adjectives. Yeah. And and got it in, had to scrape up a lot of sheetrock to do it, but that was okay. I mean, a nice tight fit. And now I'm just waiting for the countertop to get on it, and I think we're done. Wow. And then I can have my friend Truman O'Brien come over and cook us a meal anytime. Yeah. You came over and cooked us a fabulous meal.
Oh, well, thank you.
A week or so ago.
That was really fun.
It was a great night. It was a fun night talking about. The other thing is, I think you want to talk about maybe a little bit later.
We'll throw that in.
It's the coupe.
Yeah.
The coupe was the other thing. Well, you know, Steve Amston, our local guitar specialist and expert, has his birthday on Friday, which is, of course, the same day as Bob Dylan's birthday. And he has an annual Bob Dylan event at the Coop, where various musicians.
How many do you know?
Well, yeah, I think there were originally 34.
That's what I thought.
34 signed up, and I think one or two weren't able to make it. But there were over 30 that actually performed, and a few rank amateurs, or at least one. That got up there and performed, and it was it was kind of interesting. I performed a song, "I'll Be Your Baby Tonight," which there are a lot of songs by Dylan that people don't realize were written by Dylan, and that's one of them. But that song came out. He wrote that song in 1967, and it came out in an album called the John Wesley Harding album.
Oh, which is a great album.
It's actually considered the album where Bob Dylan returns to acoustic.
Yeah. Yep.
From electric, which got him lots of mixed reviews. Mm-hmm. But he goes back to acoustic. That album is special to me because at the time in 1967, I was going to school at UC Santa Barbara. And I had a run down to L.A. To get some go-kart tires and wheels because every year we have this competition amongst all the dorms and fraternities and sororities where we have push carts that have no motors.
But
they typically tip over like crazy. So I thought, well, I'll go down there and get some really wide wheels and tires. So I went down to L.A. and went to the Sears and Roebuck warehouse. Yeah. And without a glitch, was able to just pick these up.
All right.
And I thought, well, I'm down in L.A. I'm 18 years old. I've been to Disneyland and Knott's Berry Farm and Huntington Beach and a couple places like that, but I never really driven around LA. So I decided I'm going to drive around LA. It's about,
oh my gosh,
it's about I think it's about 11 o'clock on a Friday night, and it's just before Christmas. I'm listening to the radio, and I think it's KFH Boss Radio, which was at the time the biggest radio station in Los Angeles. All of a sudden, somebody comes on and says, for the next, hour, what's the name of the place? Wallach's Music City is going to be giving out 5 free albums of Bob Dylan pre-release.
Okay? Oh, my gosh.
And pre-release because Wallach's was actually the fellow who founded Columbia Broadcasting.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Recordings.
Yeah,
Columbia
Recording. Yeah.
So and the offices used to be upstairs in this place. And they said the next 5 people who walk in here and say they want the John Wesley Harding album will get a free one before it's and I look around and I'm at Sunset and Vine, and right to my right is Wallach's Music
Center. Oh, get out.
Center.
Holy smokes.
I double park right there in the middle of Sunset.
Yeah.
I jump out of my car. I run in there, and I go, I'm here for John Wesley. Hand me the album. I run back into my running car out in the street, and I take off. And the last cut on that album is I'll Be Your Baby Tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was...
You were the luckiest guy.
That was the beginning of a good run of luck.
I mean, did you win a car or something?
I did, about a year and a half later.
Unbelievable. This guy, Kevin.
So, Craig, well, that is a fantastic story. You know, I'm thinking those are the days before GPS, right? You had to have, been there or know where it was to find the place.
They said on the thing that it was on Sunset Boulevard, and I thought, wait a minute, I'm on Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, you're right there. Awesome.
Yeah, I'm on Sunset Boulevard. And I just looked around, and I thought, oh, geez, there's this huge building that says Wallach. You know, Wallach's was the biggest record store in Los Angeles for decades, and it was... until Tower Records came to town.
Right.
They sold musical instruments and you know, all kinds of things. And it was quite a place. And it was a heck of a night. I felt really, really good about that. Oh, by the way, just one little bit of trivia before I turn this over, since we're trying to kill time. You know that John Wesley Harding is improperly titled.
I did know that, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Harden. That's right. The cowboy criminal, outlaw is John Wesley Harden.
Yep,
I knew without that. A G at the end of it. But for some reason, maybe just the lapse of attention, Dylan named it John Wesley Harding.
Yeah, wow. And my response to that is that record came out when I was based in Germany in the army, and we didn't get to hear a lot of music, current music, but I don't know, somebody's mailed that to us or something. I don't remember how we got it, but boy, we played the grooves off that album.
Yeah.
And played it.
So. I do. I shouldn't even tell you the final part of that, story.
Now what?
The resident assistant that was in the hall I was living in at UC Santa Barbara was a Dylan fanatic, an absolute Dylan fanatic.
Yeah.
And when I came back to the dorm
with this
album, before it was even available publicly,
oh my gosh.
Let's just say I made a little sale. Which paid for
the trip down
a lot of stuff for a while after that.
Oh my God.
And I got the benefit of listening to it because his room was like...
It was right next door.
That's right.
Oh my gosh. Nice. I'm telling you.
Hey, Craig, I have to ask, now that you're you got this inside knowledge about the coupe. So the Dylan thing, right? You mentioned there's like 30 performers.
Yeah.
But I didn't see a single repeat song. So how does that work? Do you put in your bid for the one you want?
Right.
And,
they
sort it out?
Yeah. When they have that, I mentioned to Chris Anderson, who we interviewed here,
mm-hmm.
And I said, I said, you know, I'd kind of be interested in singing at one of those. And he goes, you're signed up. You're in.
Boy,
and
that was
I thought,
great.
Whoa, are you sure about that? Yeah. And he goes, oh, yeah, I'll tell Steve Amston right away. And he goes, what do you want to sing? And I go, I'll be your baby tonight. And they go, all right, it's a deal.
Oh, my gosh, that just like that.
That's kind of, well, I just got an email from Steve Amston here minutes ago. Just before we came on the air, because a month from now, a month from Friday, June 28th, is the date. The Steve is having a theme Friday night, where he's doing the same kind of thing. You kind of put in your bid for what you want to sing, and you, the fact that you do. And I and he said that that he'd go for me singing again.
Cool.
And the theme is highways and roads and. And, you know, Truman, you and I have done plenty of those on our morning scrambles. You know,
oh, yeah.
The
oh,
driving
yeah.
themes oh, yeah. and stuff. There's so yeah. many great songs.
Great songs. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Well, I'll have to put in my two cents. I had two things going this week. One, I poured concrete on, Wednesday? I think the day after our show. And that came out great. I was really pleased
good.
About
that's
that. Good. But I also went to the coop, as all the three of us did. And I was really impressed with your performance, Greg. I really was.
Well,
I
you mean, can fool some of the people.
No, you didn't. How about you, Kevin? Didn't you think you did a great job?
Hey, two thumbs up here. Absolutely.
Yeah,
first time. Holy smokes. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I just thought you sounded great.
Well, really, thank you very much.
Of course, having
you
everyone.
You guys are biased, I'm surprised.
Well, that's true. But having everyone sing along with you, of course, helped too. That was fun.
It does. Getting the audience involved is always a good thing. It
and you did. You
ups
got
the enthusiasm.
Yeah. No, it was really fun. Really fun.
And who doesn't know that last line, I'll be your baby tonight?
Yeah, exactly. And everybody had to sing that. And I'll tell you, the other thing that was great was the potluck. There was some just dynamite food there.
There really is.
Wow.
People bring great food, great wine.
Yeah.
I should mention the wine.
No, the camaraderie, you know, it was just great. I really enjoyed it.
Well, you know, that used to be a well-kept secret.
I know.
The coop was a secret, but I think Chris has sort of changed up a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously he told everybody on the air here if they were interested in learning about it, that they should email them and get on the list.
Yeah.
So that was, that now they have three sort of venues there.
Satellites.
Sort of the totally inside, which we were at, the one that's got a big covered tent outside, and then a full field with a big stage in the heat
outside.
Of the summer.
Yeah. Fabulous. So
I can see they may need to be expanding a little bit. It was cozy.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It was. I don't think everybody could get into the room. So maybe expanding north might be awesome.
Well, don't give Lauren Sinner any ideas. Lauren has contributed a tremendous amount of the building material.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yes. Yeah.
I imagine.
All right. So hey guys, today is it's as we always say is a significant day as all days. We only have 45 days until the Heritage Museum reopens. It's on July 5th. And 53 days to Strawberry Festival on the 19th. And 162 days till the presidential election, November 5th. Boy, I can't believe it's that soon. Coming right up.
Frightening.
It is. And today in history, there's some kind of interesting stuff. 1431, Joan of Arc was accused of relapsing into heresy by donning male clothing again, and that was the justification for her execution.
Wow, not a good time to be a woman.
And boy, can you imagine? And in 1588, this is a good one, Philip II dispatches the Spanish Armada under the Duke of Medina Sidonia from Lisbon, Portugal, to invade England. You know how that came out.
That's the one that sank.
That is definitely the one that sank.
Portugal had a little more luck with their explorations than with their wars.
Invasions. Yes. Yeah. Well, if you've seen the movie, I think it's now I'm going to go blank, but Queen Elizabeth, maybe. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they have a great depiction of that that whole faux pas. Pretty interesting.
Mm.
1892, the Sierra Club was formed by John Muir and others in San Francisco for the conservation of nature. That's Yosemite and part of that, I believe. And let's see, I got a couple of more. In 1923, the U.S. Attorney General says it is now legal to wear trousers, for women to wear trousers anywhere.
So that's quite the juxtaposition, is it not?
I thought it was, yeah.
500 years after the Joan of Arc thing.
Wow. Yeah, isn't that something? Took 500 years for us to officially say, okay, ladies, you can wear pants.
Good it's Lord. Like 15 generations.
Yeah, isn't that something? Things are slow. All right, and the last one, of course, a very significant day. 1937, Neville Chamberlain became the Prime Minister of the UK, which was a real disastrous appointment or election, if you ask me. Which he was basically the whole reason for
it. So let it just sort of, they're not going to be a problem over there on the other side of the channel.
Those Germans, they're not going to be a problem.
No.
Right. Appeasement. Yeah. So I think we should learn that appeasement historically doesn't work. But I got to wonder what would happen if somebody other than Chamberlain had ascended to the prime minister seat.
Yeah, who knows?
We don't have a historian today, but Bruce.
I know, darn it.
Calling you to see what you think.
Indeed, I would really like to hear that.
Bruce said he might make it halfway through the show, so we got our eye on the Zoom
window. I'm keeping looking at the participants down there to see if he drops in on us. I hope so. If he does, let's remember to ask him about that. Yesterday was Memorial Day. Anybody do anything particular to participate?
No, I have to say, I mean, I watched, the various ceremonies on television at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. I remember going to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier when I was a little kid, and it was very moving.
It's very moving.
Yeah
very, it is amazing. Moving. Those young men that, and women, I guess now.
That have the honor.
The honor guard. Whew. Yeah. Boy, they are something.
They are. And to blow the perfect trumpet that those two buglers.
Perfect.
Doing taps. Yeah. They're really quite extraordinary. I can never listen to taps without, breaking
getting emotional.
Up a bit.
Yeah, me too. And then, of course, I love watching the concert. This was actually on Sunday they did it this year. They show it on PBS where Gary Sinise and Joe Mantegna. I can never say
Mantegna.
I can never say his name. But they've been doing it for now like 20-plus years.
I appreciated the sentiments. I think Voice of Vashon for one about the meaning of the day, and there were a few happy Memorial Days, which I kind of cringe when I read. It was certainly a meaningful day, and those who have served and are in service, hats off to the people who are willing to defend the country and stand up for what we have here. So appreciate that.
Well, or you enlisted to keep from getting drafted. That happened. happened to some of us.
Yeah.
But
Or you got lucky like I did with a 346 lottery number.
Oh gosh. Well, of course I was before the lottery.
That's right.
Yeah.
I was. See, that's some bad timing.
Yeah, I know. That's the story of my life.
Good thing you had me in that airplane when we went down.
That's what I was thinking, actually. Oh gosh. So I see the next thing on here was, did everybody attend the Dylan and Steve Amston birthday party? So we already kind of did that one, didn't we?
Yeah. Hmm.
You did. But I will, I'll do a shout out. There were two folks that I know who actually stood up and sang.
Oh, okay.
And both first timers. So pretty awesome. I have not done that myself, so I can imagine the adrenaline that's going through your body when you're standing up in front of a room full of folks. I thought both Rick and Craig. Fantastic job. It's great to be there, and nice to see the crowd. Really appreciate the work that was done.
Yeah, me too. I thought it was great. I've only been to the Coop a couple of times before that, and that was before it has expanded to the extent that it has now.
The Coop is an example of the opportunities to listen to great music on this island, stuff that you would have to drive for an hour if you were on the other side of the water here, and you'd have to pay a lot of money to listen to. We get to go to those things with contributions is what they were asking for there. Just unbelievable, the tremendous opportunities. There are Friday and Saturday nights where Lynette and I will run from one venue to the next.
And
I think it's worth definitely going just for the decor.
yeah, it's pretty cool.
Described that when folks from the coop were on the show, but I particularly enjoyed the ceiling decor. I think there was a chain of alligators over one of the doors. If I'm right, there's probably a story there.
Yeah. It takes a while to get that decor like that, you know, with all the T-shirts from various events and the posters. And it always reminds me of, you know, I've mentioned this before, Pat Ingrassi, my friend, who died several years ago, who was our bus driver for many, many years on the island, Metro driver. He and I drove down from Washington, D.C. down to New Orleans, and we went down the Mississippi for a good portion of it. And stopped in so-called juke joints.
Oh, yeah.
And the juke joints had a very similar look to the coop, or I should say the coop had a very similar look to juke joint.
Yeah.
That's our very own, you know, low-down juke joint here on Vashon. People, as Chris Anderson says, people from all walks of life, from the highest, positions like... former airline captains to the lowest lawyers, low-down lawyers. Yeah. We'll walk in there, and we're all the same.
Yeah, and totally comfortable.
Yep.
Totally comfortable. Yeah, I agree. I agree.
I have to say, I particularly appreciated the creative use of galvanized plumbing material and steam dials.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nice touch.
Yeah. It
you got to go to check this out. If you haven't been, you got to go see
gotta
it.
Got to go. Yeah.
Can't describe it here.
All right, so let's. I was going to do ask Amy about what's going on with the Ferry Action Committee, but unfortunately, she's traveling today, and we're going to miss that. So, any other state news of interest, guys, that I may have missed? And no.
Nothing for me.
So let's go on to national then. So, of course, today the Trump trial is. They just started oral arguments, I guess, about 30 minutes ago. For their closing.
Prosecution.
The prosecution and their closing. So, as I understand it, the prosecution does theirs, then the defense?
No. The defense has already done 2.5.
No, I mean closing arguments.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, they are closing?
The defense is already done.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In state court in New York, the defense goes first, and the prosecution goes second, and there is no rebuttal. That's just the way it is. Defense says theirs. Prosecution, because they have the burden, they go last. They have theirs. And that's it. So the prosecution said...
How much whining there is about that?
Yeah, there has been a lot of whining.
Yeah.
Fair amount of complaining.
Yeah. Trump said that was unfair, even though that's the way it's done in thousands of state court every year. And is uniformly done that way.
Yeah. Say again?
He's a New Yorker. He should know better.
He should know better, for sure, for sure. So now they're going to finish the closing arguments, and then it goes to the jury. And who knows how long that's going to be, huh?
Well, you know, it's always difficult to tell. I mean, it's difficult to give you a read on the whole procedure because you're not there in the courtroom.
Right.
And you don't get a sense for, you know, the drama. One way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the television news people are always looking for drama.
Of course.
And they're making drama out of things that really are not dramatic.
It's kind of the normal.
That's right.
Stuff, right?
But there are some truisms. And one of them is that after a jury has sat for a few weeks in a trial and listened to a lot of evidence, normally they got a pretty good handle on it. And then after final argument, where hopefully things have been organized for them.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes they can come out pretty quickly.
So, you know, I've never sat on a jury. I've had jury duty where I, you know, didn't get placed on a jury. So what I'm curious about is, so they retire to their room, and do they take a vote right away? Just to right off the bat, just to say, hey, how's everybody feeling? Or do they review stuff, or does it vary?
It varies. The first thing they do is they elect a chair.
Right, I knew that.
Mm-hmm. And then after that, they proceed however they want to, as long as it's consistent with what the judge has told them. Unfortunately, there's all this work that goes into the jury instructions, which is what they will get before they go in. But they can't take the jury instructions with them. And the jury instructions,
they just have to remember it.
Oh, they're long and they're complex, but they're not permitted. They're permitted to take notes as the jury instructions are read to them, but they're not permitted to take the jury instructions with them. And if nobody can remember a particular topic, they can always ask the judge whether or not they can come out and they
and get clarification.
Yeah, or they can get that read to them again. You know, one or two or whatever the case may be. But yeah, once you got the chair, then you can proceed any way you want to. The chair might very well go, okay, let's take just a little quick
straw poll.
Yeah, huh? Straw poll, see where we're at here. Or the chair might decide, well, I don't want anybody getting committed. You know, once you sort of show your hand, it's oftentimes a little difficult to move somebody off that. So they might say, no, let's not do that until we've discussed this.
Sure.
So,
yeah, it's really interesting. I find the whole procedure to be kind of fascinating, really. I mean, the whole process. The thing that bothers me about this whole Trump business is how much he's undermining our normal processes that we, you know, have done for what, 200 years plus. You know, I mean, just like we were just saying, I mean, this is what's done 1,000 times a day, and yet he's saying, oh, it's totally unfair to me.
I have to keep my mouth shut for a second. Go ahead, Kevin.
And I was going to harken back to the what do the juries do when they go into deliberations. And I've actually sat on two juries. Mm-hmm. The one that's more memorable than the other one was a murder case. And the person under trial was not the person who was accused of actually committing the murder, but was abetting the crime. And that was memorable for a couple of different reasons. One is they did keep us together. They didn't let us, like, for lunch, just go where we wanted to. It was like, no, we're all going to go to this place, and you're all staying together, and we didn't want distractions, I guess. But we did, fairly early on in the process, do the take the vote thing, and it was like 11 to 1.
Wow.
And it was now what do we do, right? And so then we went into discussion and dialogue and so on, and probably an hour, maybe a little bit longer than that, when one of the persons, we didn't raise our hands, you know, so when we voted, you didn't know who voted which way, which sort of helps to mitigate that commitment, Craig, that you were talking about, which I think is pretty important to consider. But like an hour and a half in, one person says, oh, wait a minute. I didn't understand the jury instructions. Yeah, he's guilty. And it was like, yay, everybody's happy. You know, then we're done.
So how long did it take?
We did take a break for lunch. So it was probably about maybe 3 hours.
And how long was the trial?
Boy, that's a good question.
Well,
it doesn't sound like we were sequestered for the duration of the trial. It probably was a couple of days.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was the person there who was the accused, you know, was basically admitted that he helped his friend get into this house. Had no idea his friend was going to commit murder, which is what happened. And so he was actually very open about his role. But when the judge said, you know, despite the fact that this person had no idea of what was going to happen, he aided in the committing of a crime, and you must find on the basis of fact whether he's guilty or innocent. Like today in the Trump trial, where apparently the defense attorney was mentioned, you can't possibly send Trump to jail based on what Cohen said. We were schooled that we were not the ones who were going to mete out the punishment. That's for the judge. Our job was to determine truth or false and guilt or innocence based on the data provided. So hopefully this jury will take that instruction as well.
Yeah, the judge kind of read Blanche the Riot Act in private afterwards about that one, about saying, you know, do you really want to send a former president of the United States to jail kind of thing? And wasn't supposed to say that. Yeah, I was on a jury as well.
They actually, as an attorney, they'll actually let you sit?
Just like two our two attorneys on the Trump
jury. Yeah, that's kind of unusual.
But it is unusual because afterwards I went to lunch with the prosecutor and the judge. And the judge said, I was really surprised that you ended up on the jury.
Yeah.
But we did the same thing. We did a, they elected me the chair. Mm-hmm. And we took a private poll. And it was 11 guilty and one not guilty. Hmm. I was the one not guilty.
Oh.
I said, well, let's talk about it. I mean, I didn't tell them that I was the one.
Right, yeah.
But I said, let's talk about it. The jury instructions say this, this, and this, and this. And how does this fit in there, you know? And people were having trouble. And I said, well, you know, when I think about it, I think he might be innocent. we acquitted him.
You did?
Yeah, unanimously acquitted him.
Oh, you dog.
Well, I didn't, you know, I wasn't trying to.
No, I know.
But I was just, let's look. We had the instructions. We were permitted to have the instructions. And I said, let's look at these. And so.
And review exactly what they tell you.
Yeah.
Now, that brings up another point. Oh, go ahead, Kevin. Go ahead.
Well, I think that it's, you know, we're having this conversation. People are listening to what we're saying and thinking about maybe this process of deliberation and how do you decide. I think my eyes really opened when schooled about the rules of evidence and the fact that there's lots of claims that get made, but it really boils down to what evidence do you have? And that's the only thing to be considered. All of those misstatements in court, right? They school you, don't listen to that, ignore what you heard from that person. Just here's the data, like here's the facts. Mm-hmm. And it really, I think, kind of opens up a whole different way of looking at things that work even outside the courtroom, mm-hmm. right? Where are claims being made where there's really no factual basis for a person? Like you're in some kind of a debate or an argument, and somebody comes up with something that seems maybe plausible, but they really don't have any proof, any evidence that they can show. And I think it just helps. Is one of many ways to think about the world around us. So,
it requires a lot of precision.
Well, it's critical thinking.
Yeah, it is.
That's really what we're talking about.
Right. I'll give you a perfect example during the Trump trial.
Okay.
That where this came up, and the press kind of went, at least the progressive or liberal press went a little crazy, was when Blanche, the defendant's attorney, had Michael Cohen on the stand. And after he asked him a couple of questions, he goes, "Oh, that's a lie. You lied." Mm-hmm. And then they came out to the commentators, and the commentators, well, they were always out at the commentators because you didn't see this live. Yeah, right. And the commentator says, "Oh no, he's been caught in a lie. That really is going to undermine the case." And the fact of the matter was, no, it was just the defense attorney who said it was a lie.
Right.
That's not evidence.
Right.
That's argument. As a matter of fact, there should have been an objection to that.
Sure.
And there might have been, for all I know. But it's interesting. You know, the opening argument, you can't make an argument. It's opening statement. They don't even call it an opening argument. At the beginning of the case, you got to just say
this is what it is, right?
Well, this is the evidence we're going to present, and this is what it's going to show. Okay. Right. At the end, you have a field day. You can make all sorts of arguments based on the evidence. You can't make up evidence or whatnot.
Yeah.
But it's when this morning, when the defense counsel was making their final argument, that Trump was probably his happiest.
Hmm.
Absolutely his happiest. And right now that I think the prosecution has started its closing argument, Trump is going to be the unhappiest.
Boy,
and I would not doubt for a moment that he is making all kinds of grimaces and and whatnots, and the judge probably before this afternoon is over with may have to tell counsel, get your client under control. The prosecution did say they were going to go for 4.5 hours, which seems to me is a mistake.
Four and a half hours in their closing?
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah, that's a mistake. Less yeah. is more. Somebody said this.
I think somebody
less
said
less is more. Yeah.
More, is more or less.
Especially yeah. after you've just had a big lunch.
Yeah.
And listened to 2.5 hours of argument in the morning.
Yeah.
So I hopefully they'll you know shorten up their argument and not you maybe help hopefully they'll surprise the jury and go oh God, we're done. Oh,
well, thank God. It was 2 o'clock. Is the note I got from home saying. That's when their closing argument started.
Okay.
It was at 2 o'clock. So do they have a time limit? I
well, mean, they have to ask for permission from the jury to go beyond a certain time.
Oh.
Are you willing to go beyond a certain time? And knowing the jury, they probably are going to say yes.
Yeah, let's get this over with.
Right. But you never know.
Wow. So that's one more procedural question. Kevin was saying that they were sequestered or that they were kept together throughout their deliberations. So will they sequester the jury for these deliberations? Will they keep them together or will they allow them to go home?
My guess would be they'd be sequestered for this, but I don't know for sure.
Hmm.
And is that a lot of news? That's for sure that we know.
Yeah.
We know
so is that up to the judge then to make
yeah,
that determination?
It's up to the judge, right? Hmm. Judge has discretion in that regard.
This is fascinating. Yeah, Kevin.
Well, I was going to say for, you know, particularly anybody today who's listening to us who's still in high school, if you have the opportunity, take a debate class.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I took debate in high school because the debate coach offered to have you go to his class so you didn't have to take an hour of study hall, which I felt I would have been bored to tears sitting in the cafeteria with a bunch of other, yeah. you know, with 100 other students.
Yeah,
so I
lines.
Went for debate. Yeah. And it was awesome. You could go and do research. And you really did have to stand up in front of other people and try to make a case. Mm. And you had to argue both sides, which was, I think, pretty helpful in terms of really understanding how arguments get made. And I say it is one of those things that have benefited me in all kinds of aspects. So if anybody's intrigued by this conversation, how this really works, debate class is a great way to get some experience.
They are. And it really kind of points out the first time that you prepare for a debate or the first time you prepare for a trial, you go, oh, okay, I got my case all together. We got a really strong case. We're really getting a strong case. And then you hear the other side's argument, and you go, oops. I go, well, that's a pretty good argument that they made there. So this morning when the defense was making their final argument, I heard a person or two say, oh, it doesn't look like it's going well for the defendant. I mean, for the state, the prosecution. And I said, no, this is just the way it goes. This is where you're going to, if you're in favor of conviction, you're going to be at your lowest, you know, ebb. Listening to the defense argument. But when you hear the state's argument, you'll go, oh, okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. Sure.
The other thing.
They can go last.
The other thing. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that in terms of public service announcements where you suggested people take the debate class, I'd also encourage people to accept jury duty. There's sort of a cliche about, oh, jury duty, I don't want to go jury. Jury duty is really an important function in democracy under our system of justice. And you really do have not only many rights in this country, but you have responsibilities. And that's one of the responsibilities. And it's not horrible, as Kevin can vouch for, I'm sure. People take that responsibility once they get there very seriously. And it can be very interesting and a real learning experience. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage people, when you get that notice that says, you know, unless, of course, you've got some real thing you can't, you know, can't go. But if there's any way you can go to jury duty, go. You'll be surprised.
You know, I've only been called once in my whole life.
What were you called? Oh, I'm sorry.
Wow. late for dinner. No. And I went and then was dismissed. You know, I was not used. But I thought, well, and actually I was a little disappointed. I kind of wanted to to have that experience.
You said I wanted to string him up before you heard any
I
evidence?
I did. That's probably why they dismissed me.
Probably.
Yeah. I'm going to give him a fair trial and then string him up. That's what they used to say.
So what you say in Texas and Montana.
That's
huh?
right. That's right. That's well, maybe that's why. All right. So, hey, a couple more items here. Speaking of courts and stuff, what about the approval rating of the Supreme Court? I understand it's now 60% disapproval. And, of course, Justice Alito's upside-down flag certainly didn't help much. And one of the things that I think Molly mentioned this morning that I thought was very interesting is that Alito is saying that he has no control over his wife. You know, she can make her own decisions about things. Oh, but you women that are pregnant, you don't have that right to make that decision. Isn't that interesting?
That's right.
Isn't that interesting?
That's right.
So what do you think about this?
You can almost figure that given the court's approval rating is so low and flying some of those flags, there's a certain segment of the population who's actually going to say, yeah, I liken that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
oh, yeah.
that's going to, in a certain segment, that's going to boost their approval rating. So it's really bad. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I find that really interesting. The fact that they should have showing any kind of favoritism either direction.
You know? No, you have a responsibility to not have a scintilla of favoritism or bias. The appearance of bias is to be prevented at all costs. I mean, I think I may have mentioned this once before, but you know, my full time job is basically an arbitrator, right, which is sort of like a private judge. And before I take a case, I have to fill out a disclosure form that goes on for about 10 pages.
Wow.
With every conceivable thing that might
be conflict.
Cloud the appearance that I have of neutrality. And you would think that that would be multiplied algebraically for the Supreme Court members.
For every case, right?
Every case.
Yeah.
But every single case.
But they don't do that, right?
No, they don't. They have lifetime tenure, and the only way to remove them is through impeachment. And so
proving that, as we already know, is not going to be easy. Kevin?
So, Craig, 10 pages. Where does that paperwork go, and who actually evaluates that, and for what purpose?
The paperwork that I fill out?
Yeah.
It goes to the attorneys for both parties.
Oh,
and they can then accept or reject
correct.
You
and
based
That's
on your
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I can reject myself. I can recuse myself after looking at it and investigating any relationship with counsel or the witnesses or, you know, the parties or whatever the case may be, or, you know, that sort of thing. Occasionally I'll be on a case involving a very large internet retailer. And I'll identify. Yeah, I wonder. Mm-hmm. And I'll identify that I utilize their services, and I've bought the X number of things from them the last year, and I own X number of shares of stock in their company, and that goes to the parties, and one party can go, I don't like this person. Although I've never had that happen with that actually, but that's mm-hmm. yeah. The attorneys get it, and they share it with their clients, and then they decide whether or not they want to keep me on the case.
Of course, you know, as an airport company. Go ahead, Kevin.
You admit that you tell them to cut down on their packaging weight too, right?
Yeah, cut down on all of the plastic and the you know, and the big
cardboard.
Giant boxes for a little tiny thing inside.
Yeah,
of it.
Yeah.
Just checking.
You know, as an airport commissioner, I have to fill out the public disclosure document every year as well. Only mine has to do with financial activity that might show a conflict of interest, and that's turned into the state and reviewed by the state. And although I don't think they actually do anything about that, I think that information is available to someone who might have some, you know,
at least to a public information request.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which I find interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, what else have I got here? The Trump's Bronx rally, this one just kills me. You know, Trump again is saying, I think that his people were saying there were 25,000 people, and Trump was saying 35,000 people. And I was watching the Mariners play on TV. And they said that the crowd size at the Mariners game was like 23,000 or 24,000. And I looked at that crowd in that stadium and I went, there is no bloody way that there was that many people at that rally.
Well, and the other thing is half of them had cowboy hats on. I think they may have imported them.
Yeah.
Did a reverse a parallel import, but this time of Trump fans from Texas.
But isn't that, that just blows me away. I won't even go there. I won't even go there. It just drives me nuts. Okay, hey, just one more item here on the, speaking of these events. We have two scheduled presidential debates. Anybody have opinions about that, about what you think about that? No?
Yeah, we do. Go ahead, Kevin.
I don't know quite how it all went down in reality, but I thought it was entertaining that the media coverage was like a one-upsmanship type thing. No, I'm ready to debate you. No, I'm ready. I'm more ready than you are to debate. Right? So they're throwing down the gauntlet for sure. It will be, of course, intriguing. You know, Trump does have a very capable style. I guess all those years on The Apprentice gives you some credentials to appear in front of a camera. And of course, Biden appears to be ready to rise to the occasion to talk about not only great work that he has done, in my opinion, the great work he's done for the country, and also probably attack some of Trump's more crazy ideas. So I think it will be must-watch TV for those who are undecided. Of course, for me, I can take the day off.
Tell us how you really feel, Kevin. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, I don't. Go ahead.
No.
Well, I was going to say, I think the elephant in the room is that those of us who are primarily identify with the Democratic Party are afraid, are concerned about Biden's performance because he has some sensory motor issues. He's had that stammer all of his life. Trump, of course, loves to just talk right over the top of you not hardly get a word in edgewise.
Now, they were talking about muting the mics for when the other person is speaking. Do you think they're going to do that?
I don't think Trump will participate if that happens. Mm-hmm. Is that a final? Kevin, do you know if that they decide?
That's what I've heard is, there's always, he didn't testify in his own trial, so I guess there's always the chance that he'll back out. That's what I heard from the news coverage, that was one of the conditions. Mm-hmm. And we haven't heard yet that condition has, been a disqualifier, as far as I know. And I think it's a great idea. And I guess I would love to watch the coverage where the mouth is going, but you can't, you guys can't hear. It's sort of blissful.
And actually, it should go both ways.
Well, of course.
I just think that that's the fair way to do it. The only thing that they might want to do is put him in a soundproof box.
The $10,000 question.
Yeah, $64,000.
That's right. Exactly. $64,000 question.
Exactly. All right, one more here. RFK Jr., he failed to win the Libertarian Party's presidential nomination. But he says he hopes that folks will vote for him anyway in November. And well, that's also the thing that Trump said. Trump said he hopes that all those libertarians will vote for him in November when they booed him off the stage. Did you guys see that?
He
was only on the stage for 34 minutes.
Yes.
And got booed off. But I'm just curious about RFK. What is the effect if he is coming as a third party candidate? Do you think he's going to affect the election one way or the other?
Well, there's debate on that. I keep hearing it both ways. He's going to take votes from Biden, or no, he's going to take votes from Trump. So I don't know.
We looked at, I'm going blank on his name now. It's a Texan.
Ross right.
They think that he had a kind of a big effect on that election, but I'm just curious.
RFK was also pretty well funded, right? As a billionaire, you can put his name out there quite a bit. Yeah, I've heard both ways regarding who Kennedy is going to take votes from. I think in one sense, it's, I understand why people feel frustrated and they want to vote for a third party candidate who, you know, our history shows has virtually no chance of being in the White House. So you can lodge a protest vote. I get that. The system allows for that. In one sense, it's a democracy where our job, Craig, you were talking about jury duty as sort of an obligation that we have living in a democracy. I think it's really appropriate for people to think of the candidates who are likely to be in the seat. I think you have an obligation to pick from those, basically to say, you know, that's the person, a third party isn't going to be running the country. We need everybody to think about who they want to have running the country and select. But that's just a personal opinion about how I think about things.
Well, until we come up with ranked choice voting, you know, we're kind of stuck with that, basically. You know, I mean, if you think
ranked choice voting would be a solution set, and you know, we're not real close to that.
I believe the state of Alaska.
It's nice to see it's happening in places.
Yeah, I think the state of Alaska is doing that. Are they not?
It is. And there's other districts around the country that are using ranked choice voting. So hopefully, people will find they like it. What I've heard people are like, no, we shouldn't have that. It just makes voting harder, right? You have to now put, you know, rank your choices. Well, my guess is you don't have to, right? If you wanted to just vote for one candidate, go for it, right? And you don't have to fill out your whole ballot when you vote today. But hopefully people would take it seriously and think about who their preferences are.
Right. I'm worried, as I'm sure many people are, if one... Trump gets convicted, and two, whether Trump loses the election.
Oh, I mean,
what exactly will be the response? Right. I mean, obviously the response is already, articulated, that it's,
rigged.
It's a rigged, it's a fraud, it's unfair, you know. And it's only fair and equitable if he wins on both of those matters. That goes back to the original comment about undermining that you made, Truman. Our democratic institutions,
right? And you know that it's going to happen. I mean, you just know it is.
It's happening now before the fact.
Sure. So. Well, just like he did last time.
Yep. But I think it could happen a little in more exaggerated fashion.
Yeah. I agree.
Well, we know that's what he'll say. And so hopefully that can also be sort of preloaded into people's thinking. But I wonder, Craig, it's a fascinating thought, and I have to see where my brain comes out on. But the first thought I had was, you know, he's lost other trials. I mean, he has this whole notion that, this whole trial specifically around the hush money payments was engineered in order for Trump to lose support in the election and therefore lose the presidential election. Well, there's other trials where his true colors have shown pretty clearly. His organization has been, you know, found guilty. They had to shut down his charitable account for mismanagement of money, right? So there's those things that are out there too, which I think provides pretty much the color commentary on who the guy is.
Yeah.
But certainly the conspiracy theorists will be going crazy with that one.
Critical thinking is required again. In the last couple seconds, did you see Judge Eileen Cannon's order this morning?
No.
Where the federal government asked for a gag order to stop the president from saying that Biden had had given the FBI the permission to assassinate him.
Yeah.
And she denied that motion, at least.
The gag order?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Boy. But not on the merits. It's because she said the federal government hadn't engaged in conversation with the other side yet, which you have to do before you make those kind of motions. So
does that open up the possibility of bringing this motion again?
Yes, it does. But it also, in the interim, brings the possibility of increased misinformation based on a misunderstanding of the ruling in that motion.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, good point.
All right. Well, folks, we're just about out of time. I just want to, one quick thing. China claims that they've intercepted alien signals, but our American SETI researchers say, no, not so fast. We kind of doubt it. What do you think? Do you think we've been hearing, do you think the Chinese have been hearing from aliens?
Well, you know, Degrassi always says that there's, it's very unlikely, and you know this. What's the astrophysicist that you know?
Yes, where he talks about the time,
the
and
timing.
Distance.
He goes, and the length of time that the universe has been around, the chances of there being somebody somewhere that could actually communicate with us at the same time we're here is
pretty remote.
Very remote.
Yeah.
So you know, I mean, I guess it's a possibility, but. And then you've sent us that interesting article about lasers.
Exactly. Yeah. About the distance that they're communicating.
Right.
All right. So, guys, we're out of time. Next week, Amy's going to be our host, and she's going to have Jennifer Hawk, who's the Bearded Road Report lady. And,
she's great.
She is great. Yep. And she does a wonderful job with the Road Report. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, from Craig and Kevin and myself and our two absentee folks, we certainly appreciate your listening to The Briefly, and we will see you all next week.
Bye now.